Michael, thank you very much for that fulsome introduction. The trouble with fulsome introductions is that you've now raised their expectations. They're actually going to expect something half decent from me. And in fact, the alternative approach to introductions was one adopted by my Swedish friend Anders Lundström, who Rob knows very well. And whether he was introducing me to a group of 10 Swedes, or whether he was introducing me memorably to a group of 2,500 on one occasion, he simply said, "David Story, cricket player." Now, given that Swedes know nothing at all about cricket, it had absolutely no effect whatever on expectations. But as you were going through your introductions, I was looking round the room and I was thinking, I wonder what they make of it. I wonder what they're actually thinking about that introduction. And the first thing they're probably thinking is, he's done it for a long time. And some naive people might be of the view, well, if he's done it for a long time, he must know all the answers. And of course, that is absolutely not true. And the alternative is that some of you might think, well, he's done it for a long time. How on earth can anyone be interested in small firms for that length of time? And I'm quite sympathetic to that point of view. You know, it is a strange thing to be interested in this subject for a very long time. And the third, perhaps, reaction is to say to yourself, well, he's been doing it for a very long time. I wonder how he started. And I'm just going to perhaps start with how I started, because you referred to the University of Newcastle. And almost all of my early work was involved in the northeast of England. And I basically started very shortly before Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister in 1979. And Thatcher came to power with a number of policy objectives, one of which was to seek to create an enterprise culture. She wanted to move the UK away from what she called a dependency culture to an enterprise culture. And in order to do that, it was very fortunate that at that time there was a piece of research which came across the water from the United States, which reportedly showed that 2/3 of the increase in employment in the United States was generated by firms with less than 20 workers. And this was a guy, David Birch. And David Birch, it's always said, if David Birch hadn't existed, Margaret Thatcher would have invented him. Because it really emphasized the notion of enterprise and the role which it could play, particularly in times of recession. And arguably, many of the issues which are around today, and even as I'm going to show you, the same personalities were around in the 1980s. And the classic one, of course, is Lord Young. Lord Young's report yesterday came out. Some of you may have seen it. I saw there was quite a lot of coverage on local television about this Lord Young report. The problem I've always had was that, as I said to you, I started in the northeast of England, and my first job was actually what I call an exercise in job accounting. It was to physically count up from a variety of different sources the total number of jobs which were created in new businesses in Teesside over the previous 15 years. And we arduously put that lot together. And we came up with a figure that over a 15-year period, there were approximately 1,600 jobs created in new manufacturing firms in Teesside. And 3 days after that, the British Steel Corporation closed the Britannia Steelworks with the loss of 2,000 jobs. So in one day, more than the total number of jobs which were created in new businesses were essentially wiped out. So I have never been persuaded totally of the immediate and comparatively short to medium term impact of job creation and the role of small firms. That's my starting point. And rather like Lord Young, it continues to be my current point. So whether we're talking about the 1980s or whether we're talking about 2013, the same phrases keep coming up, the same issues keep coming up. If you look in this green document, you will see all those phrases appear. SMEs are the key to recovery. They create jobs, that access to credit is vital, and that what we need to do is to create an enterprise culture. Tonight's lecture could be subtitled, "What Lord Young Didn't Tell You in This Document." What do we actually know about new firms? The first is that most of them don't survive. They are essentially short life businesses. Broadly, 3/4 of them do not exist beyond year 6. And of those that do, remember, we're only talking about the 28%, of those that do, they stop. The typical firm stops growing after year 3. In other words, year 3 is its maximum size. Where I do agree with Lord Young, unquestionably, but we have totally different interpretations of this, is that if you look at job creation in the small firm sector, broadly only a few matter. A very tiny proportion of firms, of new firms, disproportionately create jobs. But what Lord Young doesn't tell you is that these job-creating firms are found in the most bizarre collection of sectors. They are not concentrated exclusively by any stretch of the imagination in what you would view as the high-tech industries. I remember doing a piece of work a few years ago, and the fastest growing firm in the region was a tyre remoulder. I remember doing a presentation in Cambridge not very many years ago about the fastest. I said to them, who do you think is the fastest growing firm within 50 miles of this university? And I was told all about Trinity Science Park and various, all sorts of them. Fastest growing firm was a boot and shoe manufacturer. So this notion that it's very easy to identify these firms. And the other thing that Lord Young doesn't tell you, and what I'm going to emphasize, is just how variable the performance of these firms are. If they're doing well this year, they're not necessarily doing well next year. And therefore, forecasting, predicting who is going to do well and who's going to do less well is perilously close to a lottery. Perilously close to a lottery. I'm now going to present you some diagrams. For those of you who are not interested in diagrams, please do not switch off. I know it looks horrible when you look at it first, but I will try and walk you through it. This is data for New Zealand. Why New Zealand? Because it's the only country which will actually do this data analysis for me. I wanted this done for the UK, but nobody strangely will do it. Let's assume that we start at a particular point at year naught, this block here. By definition, we have all firms of a particular size in year naught. And what we're interested in is, as we move across time, how many move to the left, i.e. decline in size, and how many move to the right, i.e. increase in size. And what you should see is that by the time we get down here to year five, obviously there are fewer, by definition, less than 100% who are in the same size category. But actually, there are more firms to the left, i.e. decliners, than there are firms to the right, i.e. increases. So how does employment increase in that economy? The answer is because the new firms come in, supplement those, and they then go out again. So it's a very transitional economy. Second diagram, again, looks horrible, but actually is quite nice. This is Cambridge. We're now moving closer to home. These are Cambridge fast growers, or growers. And what Elizabeth Garnsey is doing is she's trying to show you how the pattern of growth is. So how many firms over 6 or 7 years grow continuously in every year? Answer, 6%. So this notion of continuous, consistent growth just doesn't happen. These are the other patterns of growth. And these, remember, are the growers, and arguably, this is the exemplar of the British technological economy. Other patterns means it's absolutely all over the place. You know, have 1 year grow, next year decline. Just imagine what the problems would be. This is 22%. What happens if we decide they've done jolly well up until now? It's about time we made an investment in them. It's tricky. It really is very tricky. And the final one. Let's assume that we've got a group of firms which start at year, let's say, year one or year naught. And they survive to year one. What then happens to them in year two and in year three? And the answer is about a third of them grow in both year one and in year two if they survive. Only if they survive. 22% of them decline in both years. And 27% of them grow in year two, and 19% of them grow in year three. What you should be picking up is this variety, this volatility, which characterizes these new businesses. And this notion that because you did well this year, that you're going to do well next year, is absolutely not the case. So, where do we get the data from for that last diagram? This is work that I have been doing with Alex Code in Sprue. Alex has done the decent thing and left the country on the grounds that I was going to give the lecture tonight. The data that we have, of course, every researcher tells you that their data are the best. The only difference is that I'm telling you the truth. This is the best data you will ever get on new businesses. It's taken from Barclays, and it logs every financial transaction of businesses over a long period of time. We know exactly when they start, because if you ever tried to start a business on a private account, you will get a letter from the bank pretty damn quick saying, why are you buying all this kit? So the bank monitors you very, very closely. We know when they start, and we can track them pretty much from inception. Crucial thing is it's not based upon the bank giving them a loan. All the bank is doing is providing them with banking facilities, i.e. It's a bank account information. It's not based upon that. It's not a selection of people who they gave loans to. And essentially, it's a sample drawn from Barclays, who have about a 1 in 5 share of the small business market. And it constitutes about 6,000 firms from 2004 for 6 years. So most of those years, and it's very important, most of those years are good years. It's only probably late 8, 9 and into a bit of 10 that are bad. This is as good as you are going to get as far as the macro economy is concerned. Best we can offer you. So what do you get? You get two measures of performance of new firms. First one is, do they survive? And the second one is, do they grow? Do they get bigger? You remember the figure I gave you early on? By year 6, 3/4 effectively of those that start are no longer there. Lord Young doesn't tell you that figure. Even more interesting is the second bullet point. What it says is, what are your chances of having a turnover of £1 million? Remember, best ever macroeconomic circumstance. If you can't make it after 2004, it's tricky. What are your chances? 1%. 1% of those that start actually have a turnover of £1 million six years later. And only 4% of those that survive. And of those, only 7% grow year on year on year on year. The big picture is this huge fluctuation and volatility. So what do the death rates look like? The answer is, when you start, for the first 6 months, you've got a pretty good chance of surviving 6 months. By the time you get to 12 months, life's starting to get difficult. The 12 to 18 months is the what we might call the inverse valley of death. Why do we think that happens? Because essentially people start out with a pot of cash or access to funding, and the business doesn't work, they run down it, and that's it. It just didn't work. And that's the time, if you don't have any wins, that's the time you go. So 12 to 18 months, maybe 2 years, is the really difficult time. So you say to yourself, well, what influences whether you survive or not during this six-year period? What we really think are the factors which influence survival? And the answer is, primarily, you have to be quite big. You've got to have grown. You've got to have had, in our phrase, some wins during that period. If you don't get some wins, i.e. big orders or something like that, then you go out. So the wins are important. And therefore your size at the end of it is important, and your growth is important. So this notion of size and growth are tied up together. But essentially it says you've got to have some wins to accumulate some resources to almost offset the vicissitudes which are going to be hitting you from side to side when you're running that business. And it also helps to be big when you start. It's often interesting you see some of these stories about entrepreneurs from wealthy families. And they're successful. And I often wonder whether that's because of the... And they will say, this is because there's an entrepreneurial gene in this family. I think it's just because dad or mum funded that business through the difficult times. It's primarily that access to funding which makes sure that you don't go down the valley of death. So what makes you go? The trading variables. In essence, the one thing the bank hates is providing you with an overdraft facility and you exceeding your overdraft. It doesn't like unauthorized borrowing, and part of the reason why people do unauthorized borrowing is that their cash flows are extremely volatile. So this notion of volatility of cash flow is also, I think, hugely important. And the final one, which everyone yawns about, and they think, oh God, that's so boring, is legal form. Sole proprietorships and partnerships have much lower survival rates than do limited companies of the same size. And if you've got several hours afterwards and somebody wants to ask me a question why, I will try and answer it. But I don't have a very good answer for it. But it turns up regularly. Legal form is really quite important in survival. But arguably what's really interesting are all the things that don't seem to work very well. And academics will tell you that these things are important. There are mountains of research papers which tell you about the impact of a number of these variables on small business performance and survival. But we don't get them. The only one we might be persuaded about is age of founder. In other words, the people whose businesses are most likely to survive are those in later life who establish a business. And the people whose businesses are least likely to survive, sorry, are the young people. Now, if we can also have a little discussion as to why that might be. I might offer you a different perspective from yours, but age, young people have much higher failure rates than do older people. But it's not as striking as you might think. Education also doesn't seem to have the impact that we thought it would. One of the things they also tell you in business schools, dare I say it, Michael, is that they will quote you the examples of the United States. And they will say, individual X failed in business 37 times and succeeded in business 38. I'm joking, you know, maybe two or three. Therefore, they learnt from failure, that failure was a good thing. First of all, we don't find it. That actually, we find no evidence that individuals who have failed in business before are either more likely or less likely to survive the next time. So you say to yourself, well, why? What about the United States? Aren't there all these examples of people who... And the answer, the reply to that is, if have to bear with me, if it is primarily a lottery, then all the Americans have done is bought more lottery tickets. It doesn't mean to say they've learnt to play the lottery. It's not they've learnt to play the lottery, they've just bought more tickets. So why should they buy more tickets? The answer is the price of tickets is lower in the United States. The implications of failure are lower. You fail in the UK or you fail in Germany and you're stigmatised. So this notion of entrepreneurial learning is also sort of up for question. Numbers, gender doesn't make much difference. This one, Michael, is very interesting because we don't find any impact of business advice. And I know my friend is a coach here, so he's going to love this. But actually what you don't realise, remember my point, it doesn't have an impact. But You don't work for the Prince's Trust, do you? That's a relief. Because what we find is that the Prince's Trust actually increases the failure rate. That's survival. Let's look at the growth patterns. There aren't consistent growth patterns of firms. However hard we try, and we have honestly tried very hard to identify growth patterns, the Elizabeth Garnsey story is the one that we get. Again, the dreaded legal form turns up, i.e. you've got a better chance of growth if you are a limited company. But it's actually much more difficult to predict growth than it is to predict survival. Our models aren't bad for survival. I mean, they're not brilliant by any means, but our models for growth are lousy. What we can say are the things which don't make a difference. Getting business advice doesn't make any difference. Prior experience doesn't make any difference. The education of the founder doesn't make any difference. Predictive accuracy is extremely low. So you're probably saying to yourself, well, how do these venture capitalists make money out of this then? Yes, you were thinking that, weren't you? Terrific, I love it. Venture capitalists have a portfolio of 20 businesses. They make money on two businesses which succeed. One of them, in general, their portfolio works when one of them pays off the whole of the cost. There's extreme success. They have a second business which also does extremely well. And possibly on a good day, they have a third business which also does pretty well. So out of that 20, there are actually 17 that they wouldn't have chosen to invest in the first place if they'd known how they turned out. It's a very skewed distribution. Very, very skewed. So what does it mean for policy? A report on growing micro-businesses by my old adversary, Lord Young. What does Lord Young tell us? Lord Young says, we want the following in order to be able to pull the economy out of recession. We want to have some money set aside for startup loans. We want to put 30 million aside for growth vouchers. We want an unspecified amount set aside for growth loans. We're going to set aside 100 million for new funding to SMEs. And we want improved access to the public sector for new and small firms. That's the recommendation. Now, actually, those sums of money are trivial. They really are totally trivial. I mean, at one stage, for example, not very many years ago, we estimated that the total expenditure on supporting SMEs in the UK was in the region of £8 billion. £8 billion. That was more than was spent on the police force and more than was spent on the universities at that time. So this is trivial. So what are my reactions to this agenda? Well, I have one sentence on each of them. £30 million on startup loans. My question is, but actually we don't need more startups. We've got arguably one of the highest rates of startups in the European Union, and that's of legal ones, never mind the illegal ones. The notion that somehow an economy is better off because it has more startups is very much open to question. So am I going to spend your 30 million on that? Sorry. growth vouchers. If advice isn't demonstrably effective, then why should I spend £30 million worth of taxpayers' money on it? You've got to work hard, Lord Young, to persuade me that that's actually going to make a difference to the survival and growth of those businesses. Growth loans. Problem is that if these are loans to be given to growing businesses, how are we going to know that as a result of that loan they perform better, they grow faster? And we've seen just how volatile that is, how all over the place, and making those predictions is extremely hazardous. The 100 million on new funding to SMEs just puzzles me. I don't really know what's going on here. The one I do want to say, Michael, though, is this one. Improved access to public sector contracts. And you'd all go, yes, yes, that's a good idea. But you're a health man. How do you fancy your local health trust having its services provided by an SME which has 3/4 chance of not being there in the next 6 months, in the next 6 years? Yeah, sounds great. You know, we want to create enterprise. There's an awful lot of public sector money out there. But these are risky businesses. Let's be clear, they are risky businesses. So I'm going to conclude. That's the good news. The good news is, do we have something better to offer? And the first thing is, please sort the macro economy. Do not see, in the same way as you did during the 1980s, as small firms pulling the economy out of recession. New and small firms pulling the economy. If anything, the last one is the last bullet point it's reflected in. If anything, instead of enterprise driving the economy, it's the economy that drives enterprise. It's a very difficult, complex relationship. But we also, I think, know, and even probably Lord Young would agree with some of these, is that if you're interested in influencing levels of enterprise in an economy, one of the major factors is the attitude you have to immigration. Immigrants are highly, highly entrepreneurial individuals. You're going to have to look at some of the successful areas in the United States to see this. And yet, of course, immigration is not viewed as in any sense linked to the enterprise agenda. Tax regime, unquestionably, is important. What do we mean by competition policies? The banking sector has to be competitive. That's the crucial thing. If the banking sector is competitive and the regulations associated with Basel and others are not implemented, then you've got a problem in terms of lending to the SME sector. The third one is you have no idea over 30 years how many times we've changed policy. I mean, policy is, it's like a moving picture. And a poor small firm, even though it's probably, many of them don't see that long, the picture is constantly changing. So actually what I think the sector wants is a degree of stability. It doesn't want tinkering, this continual change. The one thing I would recommend is the United States Small Business Administration has been in power since 1952, had a Small Business Administration since, basically it's been the same organisation. We have changed so many times. Fundamentally, therefore, I think the notion of seeing enterprise, new firms, small firms, as a route of pulling the British economy out of recession is naive and misguided.